Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Yeah, shot Chicago sports for sure.
Afternoons on the Score.
Larry Lujack. Larry Lujack. WLS.
I learned that trick from Larry Lujack years ago.
WLS AM and FM in Chicago. It's Larry Lujack in the morning at 25 minutes before 6. Stephen Gary. Going to be here this morning, starting at about 6 o'clock, or whenever they show up, whichever comes first.
But I got to say, Les, that you are the most knowledgeable person as far as any kind of sports. I remember when you were with Larry Lujack back in the day on LS.
I got to work with Dahl and Meyer at both radio stations at LS and for the Loop.
Gary Meyer was a great foil to bring out Dahl's craziness back then.
They were great together.
Where does Grobstein sit? I don't want to sit where he sits.
He stands back there in the corner.
He does. Look at it. Very nice. And he's got a stopwatch and everything. He's so professional.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
If it felt like you were just listening to an audio time machine, it's because you were. That clip from WLS 1983.
83.
Larry Lujack and our next guest. Man, Johnny B yesterday, another Radio Hall of Famer to remember our dear friend Les Grobstein, gone too soon at the age of 69. Gary Meyer with us on the Score by way of the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Gary, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
So I'm sitting on a this is Larry Lujack. I'm sitting on a cloud Sunday, and here's Les. Les, what the hell? Right now, Les Grobstein is bugging the hell out of John Madden, or bugging the heaven out of him, depending on what your beliefs are. How you doing, Danny?
I'm good. I like to think that, I'm not much one for belief, frankly, or religion, but I like to think that if there is an afterlife, Les Grobstein will be watching this Packers game, rooting against them and hoping for a loss.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen, right? Okay, well, whatever you believe in gets sucked out of you once you start in radio. I think you know that by now.
Yeah, that is true. Any sort of optimism. We appreciate the time. I mean, I shared this yesterday, but, you know, Les, the comedic foil, the straight man, the punching bag, we'd all play the clips, we'd all make fun of him, and occasionally I'd say, you know, Les, hey, we didn't go too far, nothing happened there, right? And he said, I dealt with Stephen Gary. I was on the Loop. I was on LS. You guys are amateurs compared to what they did to me back in the day. So,
that's nice that he was so complimentary when he worked with you.
when you think of Les, what in those memories of all you guys busting his balls back on the air back in the day, where do you go in your mind?
Well, Les snorted sports like Tony Montana snorted cocaine. The guy had more details and things about sports than one could imagine, and then he'd start spewing them out, and the only way to really take the information and have some percussion with it is to make fun of him, because he would keep going on and on, so you had to insert something there to make it more entertaining than it would have been had he kept going with one detail after another. So that was the percussion that we found with him. In the Howard Stern parlance, he was part of our rat pack, I guess, and that's the way we played it, and he went along with it. He knew his lane. And he stayed in it and became the perfect foil for everybody he worked with. It wasn't just us.
But he was impossible to offend, right? I don't know if I've ever met anyone who could take it as well as Les Grobstein.
I know, and I don't know if that's entirely good. Maybe he internalized it to the point where at night he'd go and punch things, but he didn't seem to react to anything that would upset most people, and that's what made him Les Grobstein. If he fought it, I think that would have just put him in a corner, and nobody would have gone to him as much. But what he did was he found what his fizz was, and we enjoyed that.
Gary Meyer is our guest, remembering Les Grobstein. Everyone has said some version of one of a kind, unique. There's never anyone like him. You did radio for forever. You've been at all the stations. Did you ever come across anything approaching what Les Grobstein was?
No, he was a sports savant. It was like working with Rain Man. Yeah, 85 Bears. How many times? Yeah, it was that. He'd start doing this stuff, and I didn't ever come across anybody before or after him of that caliber, and that's what made him Les Grobstein. And that's why, again, everybody's been talking about him this week, because he was such a unique character. And I got to say, Danny, how many naked men do you think Les saw in his lifetime after 50 years in locker rooms? Jesus, he must have counted penises to fall asleep.
Yeah, but as he shared with us one time, he said, use your imagination, and you're probably right. I don't think he was intimidated. I think Les actually did very well in that department.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine. Well, okay, you got a minute? I can share one quick anecdote. When I was in broadcasting school, whatever that was, I had as an assignment, I had to take this blind sportscaster around, and I had to take him to a Cubs game, and we're sitting in the press box, and I have a very, very pedestrian knowledge of sports, and I just did it as an assignment, and then, as fate would have it, the game got rained out, and the sportscaster says to me, take me down into the locker room. I want to interview some of the players. Well, we get down there, and all the players are naked, and I was relying on them having their uniforms on, so if he said, oh, go get me Ron Sant or whomever, I could look at their uniform. Now they're all naked, so that was a nightmare. And then when Les died, I thought, how many times did he wander into these locker rooms, and this was the sea of nakedness he was surrounded with? 50 years of that. That had to be quite disturbing, or not that there's anything wrong with it, but just seeing that all the time. That was his beat.
It was, but it was the... He was made for it. And I know, you know, he would do mornings and the updates, and he worked every shift with every station, but I feel like there's something to... It just felt right, Les Grobstein doing overnights, because there was never a game on overnights. So he could watch every game, he could go to every locker room, he could see every appendage, and then go on the radio and talk about it.
There you go. Hey, let's talk about the appendage I saw today. You're going to love this. And you could get away with that at 1 in the morning. So he did, let me get this straight, he did 5 hours of sports talk every night on the Score. Is that right?
Yeah, well, and sometimes he did 7, Gary. Like sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. You do this. I do this. I've done this. And I know it's not heavy lifting. It's not like driving a truck or any of those other real jobs out there. But to talk about one particular subject for 6 hours, 5, 6, 7 hours, that's a chore. And I give him credit for doing it, and he was the perfect guy for it because he did have so much knowledge, so he could keep it spinning. But just the thought of it kind of fries my brain.
Well, especially, I mean, no co-host, rotating producers, part-time producers, no guests, really. I mean, occasionally, but it was him, a microphone, and callers for seven hours.
How many people can do that you know? And I know people listening to this are thinking, well, it's just talking, isn't it? Yeah, it is kind of that. But I always say to people, if you think you have a knack for this, sit in a room by yourself for 15, 20 minutes and start talking now. Not just talking, but make it as interesting as you can. And then go another 15, and then go an hour, and then go on. And again, that's the rhythm of it. And it's very unique, and not a lot of people can do it really, really well with the information that Les had. He was the guy. So that was the guy for your all-night show there. And now what are you going to do? You're going to need about three guys to replace him.
Trust me, we've been talking about it. We hope that it doesn't become national syndication, because everyone does overnight. And part of what makes the Score, you know, it's us and WFAN in New York. We're the only stations left in the country that have live and local overnights. But the idea of anyone else doing it than less is kind of hard for any of us around here to imagine.
Well, just turn it off then at 11 o'clock and let the transmitter cool off. I think Lee Elia should do his official eulogy. Don't you? That would be, hey, here we go. You got all these so-called broadcasters, these 200 broadcasters sitting shiva because they got nothing better to do in the afternoon. Wouldn't that be just priceless if Lee does the bookend of Les Grabstein's life?
It would be perfect. We played a clip yesterday from when we had Johnny B on, Johnny B having Lee Elia in studio and then surprising him with Les Grobstein and having him retell the entire story. Like, just the parts of Chicago history, the idea that he was at the 85 Super Bowl for the Bears and they held a press conference where Les was the one being interviewed. The guy was like the epicenter of every major Chicago sports story. His Facebook profile picture is him with Michael Jordan's arm around him. It's just unbelievable.
It is remarkable. It was, if you remember that movie Zelig, where Woody Allen would show up in every major event, that was Les Grobstein. He was just omnipresent. And I don't know how he did it. I don't know if he slept 2 hours a day and just got in the Lestermobile and just drove from one sporting event to the other. I don't know. I know he didn't iron his shirts.
No.
When he was doing it, that was obvious. But the fact that he did it was just amazing. It's not going to be replicated to any great extent by anybody because he was just that kind of person.
Well, and I think it's interesting. Like, we talk about this, but you know, you're this legend of and titan of the industry. Everyone talks about his memory and the acumen and the quirks, and that's all true. But he was a hell of a broadcaster, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Where
yeah.
It sounded like he was just kind of blah, blah, blind in some sections. But to have that rhythm is not easy. And even as long as I've been doing it, Danny, and I think you'll probably agree, it's a chore to get that stream going where you're not just blah, blah, blind. It really is something you have to work at every day. And I don't mind that challenge. That's apparently the only talent I have, and I know some people question that. But the fact is, to do it day in and day out, but 4, 5, 6 hours of it overnights, that deserves some kind of medal posthumously.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Gary, when you think about that run that you guys had and Les was a part of it, obviously radio's not the same, but where does your mind go in terms of top memories where you guys were all a part of it and just kind of defining a medium for the greatest city in the world?
And you're too young to remember any of it, right? You weren't even born when all that stuff was happening. You're a young man, right?
Yeah, born in 86, but radio dork, you know, my dad, my mom, they both listened to you guys, and, you know, I know some of the stories, but just the fact that you're even saying my name, Johnny B saying my name, that I'm afternoons at the Score, it's crazy. I'm an old radio soul, I guess, even if I wasn't around for all of it.
We came along when the business was ripe for the picking. It had been going in a certain way for a long time, and the kingpin of morning radio in Chicago at the time was a man by the name of Wally Phillips, and it was our parents' and grandparents' show, and it was time to find something for a younger demographic, and we came along, and my whole philosophy in life, Danny, good lighting and good timing are everything. And we just had the right timing when people were anxious or up for a change in Chicago radio, and it just clicked, and we hit a nerve, and things started to go. You can't really plan that. If I could do that, if I could be an architect of that and just say, you could do this, this, and this, and this will happen, well, I'd be Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk in that respect of, wow, look at all the riches. But it just happens. You can't say it's going to happen. It just does. It's a very organic thing.
It's and all of our listeners right now texting and tweeting in that it's just so good to hear your voice and that they loved it and that you defined radio in the city for a generation. Gary, thank you so much for coming on and talking about Les Grobstein. It's a loss that we're all feeling, and few, if any, people we wanted to hear from more than you who got to experience so much with him. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Daddy. I appreciate the invitation.
That's Gary Meyer, Radio Hall of Famer, remembering Les Grobstein. His services, by the way, tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., it will not be Lee Elia performing the eulogy. It will be our very own Mitch Rosen. I don't know if there are other speakers. I assume
David Schuster.
David Schuster. Thank you. Thank you, Shane. So the good thing for Mitch will be that he will be reading his eulogy, and no one will be spell checking it, because when he texted me that, he spelled eulogy U-L-O-G-Y. Eulogy. Yeah.
Lee Elia
would be a hell of a guy, though. What'd you say?
Technically, it works.
It does. I knew exactly what he meant. I knew exactly what he meant. Man, just thinking about Les, 52 years in broadcasting, working with all of those guys, and just being himself unapologetically, always, the whole time, and being that comedic foil and the information vessel. Because he was both to them. He was the sports guy and the reporter and the update person, and also the comedic foil. Just an absolutely unbelievable life lived in radio, which is a messed up life to live sometimes, but man, I still think it's the greatest. Thank you again to Gary Meyer. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score. Thanks to Gary Meyer for coming on the show. Parkinson Spiegel, I am flying solo. Matt Spiegel is in Mexico. Went to ESPN.com and Mike McCarthy does not see his future with the team as an issue. That's convenient. Quote, we had very positive conversations. The focus is on the evaluation process. I think for people in this profession, it's accepted, he said, about questions about his job status. It's part of the job. I get that. I understand why you're asking the question. It's part of the job. You have a job to do, and I have a job to do today in answering your questions appropriately and respectfully. But yeah, I don't put a lot into it because I know personally what I put into this. I understand what goes on here every day. I know how to win. I know how to win in this league. I know how to win playoff games. I know how to win a championship. So I have great confidence in that. What we've built here in two seasons, I feel very good about. And I think that you just stay true to that. The hard part is the personal. We all have kids, so that's the part that I don't like. I would hope people are respectful to that, end quote.
Let's just state the facts. I mean, I'm a highly successful NFL head coach.
Yeah. This is like chapter two of that. He's 18 and 15 in 2 years as the coach of the Cowboys. So let's cool it. Now, he was very successful in Green Bay, but whenever he did not have Aaron Rodgers, he did not have a winning season. So, I still don't think I've come across a bigger con artist in the NFL than Mike McCarthy. I know it's weird to say that a guy that's got 161 NFL wins is not a good head coach. But I'm very confident in this conviction. And he keeps saying, like, I know how to win. I know how to win playoff games. I know how to win a championship. It's like people never even let it enter into their psyche, their frame of reference, or their realm of possibility. Maybe we won in spite of me. Maybe I wasn't special or a major factor salute in the success of what we did there. Maybe it was 12. You know, maybe it was that guy. Because I don't understand what he does that is special. When in Dallas, he's got Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, Zeke Elliott, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins. I mean, he's had all pros across the offensive line. They just invest offensive talent, offensive talent, offensive talent. He's the offensive head coach, and Kellen Moore calls the plays. So what where is his difference-making impact? Because it's not on game day. We all know that from the clock management, game management, saving timeouts, all that stuff. It's not there. He don't call the plays. He's got this crazy offensive talent. He's won no playoff games in 2 years. When he had success, he had Aaron Rodgers, arguably the most talented quarterback in the history of the sport, winning these games. And he lost NFC Championship games by kicking field goals inside the 5-yard line when he had Aaron Rodgers. So, and I said this on Twitter, and I had to mute the notifications because it's just people keep going insane over it. But, like, the hiring process, what the Bears are doing right now, is deliberate. They are casting a wide, wide net. Offensive coaches, defensive coaches, former head coaches, people do. But I take comfort in knowing that the dysfunction of the Bears is not unique to them. They have their own brand on it. They're consistent with it. But there are plenty of organizations, just because they're worth multiple billions of dollars and they have billionaire owners and we are addicted to the product that they inject into our veins, like, it doesn't mean that they are necessarily well-run. I was reading about the Jaguars coaching search today because Matt Eberflus, who is getting a second interview with the Bears, is also getting a second interview with the Jaguars. And the article I was reading said, and Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, is going to be present. He's going to be making a trip from his home in Illinois to Indianapolis for the in-person interview because he wasn't present at the first one. Like, they're interviewing coaches in Jacksonville and the owner's not even there. Like, yeah, we'll just bring him in at the end. He can't be bothered. The Raiders gave John Gruden $100 million and they're going to be in a lawsuit with them for the next decade. Urban Meyer, the Giants, the last three coaches have lasted 2 years. The New York Giants, the Mara family. So I take a little bit of solace in that the Bears have company with their dysfunction. It doesn't make it any more enjoyable, but at least they're not alone. Like, it'd be one thing if it was like 31 well-run organizations, and then there's the Bears. But that's not what it is. It's like 10 well-run organizations and then 22 teams trying desperately to figure out what the hell to do. Michael Lombardi was on with Mully and Haw, and he gave some insight because he knows, you know, you can kind of read through the lines here. It's a league that protects the people that they know, right? He's big on Brian Flores. Brian Flores is a Belichick guy. Mike Lombardi's a Belichick guy. He's been very anti-Ryan Pace, anti-McCaskey family. He's got no direct ties to the organization. So it's a very incestuous, we protect who we know type of league and type of fraternity. But he knows a lot of these people that are being interviewed, which makes him a useful and entertaining guest. And he's not exactly hearing the greatest things about the Bears process.
This isn't a director of college scouting job. Like, it's not really to ask questions about what will the scouts do in the spring, summer, or fall. You know, when you're asking those questions in the interview, that's not necessarily what the GM should focus on. The GM should focus, the question should be, how do you visualize the Chicago Bears looking in 3 years? What kind of players are we going to draft? What will the grading scale look like to build the kind of team we want to build? What is the most important position in a salary cap structure? I mean, those are the kind of questions, I think. But from talking to people that have had interviews in there, that's not necessarily the way it's going. So, you know, for me, I think that if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And that's kind of what it sounds like.
What's your guys' favorite Michael Lombardi saying?
Go ahead, Shane. I have a few, so go ahead.
I don't have any.
Okay, I'm sorry. The guy has a saying.
Oh, he said that you really hold your feet to the fire.
No,
it's one of my favorite ones from Michael Lombardi.
Stop.
No, I don't consume a ton of Michael Lombardi content.
Any Sopranos tie-in I'm a big fan of. Like, you know, whenever you talk about a power-sharing situation, it's not the Dave Clark Five. You know, I like that. I enjoy that. You know, about making a timely decision. You know, I like that. You know,
I've never heard any analyst that he... It's like Bill Walsh always said. It's like Bill Belichick said. It's like Bruce Springsteen said. It's like The Sopranos. Like, every answer starts with his opinion, and then he has an anecdote, a metaphor, a quote, or a quip at the end of it. It's there's a rhythm to a Michael Lombardi answer, and I've never heard Colin Cowherd speaks in analogies, but like this guy speaks in quotes, and I've never heard an analyst handle it that way. But it would surprise me if the Bears process is not being run in that way because Bill Polian is there. Like, I do not think that Bill Polian is going to be some savior for the Bears. 79 years old. He's been out of football for 10 years. He said some really weird things as an analyst, but he is by far the most qualified person in that room by a factor of 20, if not 100. Like, it is immeasurable how much more qualified he is than the other four people in that room. And that is no knock on Lamar Campbell or Tanisha Wade. Like, Tanisha Wade, they created her position this year, and Lamar Campbell is supposed to be like a player liaison concierge type, and he's in the room with the owner of a team interviewing GM and coaching candidates. Like, we could only expect so much of them, but while I am critical of Bill Polian's presence there, it's better to have him there than to have no one there in that spot. And it seems beyond reasonable to think, or it's unreasonable to think, that the Bears interview process is not being run competently with that guy in the room.
That's exactly it. Like, you have to pick your poison here. We as Bears fans can bitch and moan about Ted Phillips making football decisions and Ted Phillips being in there for interviews. But if it's not Bill Polian, it's Ted Phillips and George McCaskey.
Right. Exactly.
Like, and pick what you want to complain about. Bill Polian's an old guy, sure. But if you don't have him there, they're not going to have anyone there.
Exactly. But when Lombardi says he's hearing that they're not asking the right questions, that strikes me as impossible to believe. Like, Bill Polian has to at least know that part of it. He has to. So, will he get it right? Man, who the hell knows? The odds are stacked against them. The majority of the league doesn't. But I do not believe that the process at which the Bears are going about this is... Whether you want to talk about the pace at which it's happening, the order at which it's happening, or the questions that are being asked, I don't think that that is their problem. I think the problem is, are they going to get a candidate that is proven or a gamble? And are they an attractive enough destination to get the home run hires? And they haven't proven to be. They've gotten popular hires. Matt Nagy was a popular hire. Ryan Pace was a popular hire. But it just, they have not proven an ability to get a person that we know is good at the job, which is why I'm obsessed with the money component of it. Like, most people in this world are motivated at least partially by money. Most people. If there's a number, like if you said Jim Harbaugh is our dream candidate, just to use him as a name because I think he is most people's dream candidate, there's a number. I don't know what it is. Is it $100 million? Is it $120 million? Is it $150 million? Like, there's a number that Jim Harbaugh would say yes to. they could meet that number. They could.
As my guy, famed rapper Juicy J says, bands that make her dance, right? It's all about the money. Dollar bills, y'all.
You do always say that. That's my favorite Shane.
It's beautifully put.
Thanks, yeah. Tony.
Yeah.
I'm so sad, Danny. I was telling Tanny this earlier. I know you're on a football rant here, but I'm like 5-6 episodes away from being done with The Sopranos, and I'm like watching half an episode a night just to kind of milk my way by.
I've got some questions for you on that, actually.
Okay.
Like, I want to know where you're at as we go, because that's amazing to me. I was just reading this article about Jonah Hill, who was watching Game of Thrones during quarantine, and he's like, I couldn't believe the Red Wedding. And he talked to his friends about it, and they were like, yeah, it was kind of a big cultural event that you're years and years late to. You're decades late to the final season of The Sopranos. So how you're experiencing that is actually kind of interesting. It's Parkinson Spiegel on The Score.
His offense is broken. Like, he is not a good offensive designer. Now, you could say, well, they had a bunch of injuries in the line. No. They've been bad in that offensive line since, as Tony would say, since time immemorial.
Since time immemorial. Now, that's it. That's all I got to say. Frankly, I'm depressed and ashamed.
David Haw, the Mullion Haw Show listening. And I said, what's your favorite Michael Lombardi line, putting the guys on the spot? Texting, the Bears are lost, but they're making good time.
David is always listening. He texted me the same thing.
Great man.
The best.
Great man.
Don't know how I feel about Golden Retrievers, though.
We're lost, but making great time.
Incredible. So you just watched Soprano Home Movies. The opener of part two of season six of The Sopranos last night.
Where Bobby and Tony beat the ever-living crap out of each other because Bobby doesn't understand the relationship that Tony has with Janice.
Yes. So you've got more than a few. You've got one, two.
You've got nine left, I think.
Nine left.
Tonight is stage five. And I haven't decided yet if I'm going to watch the whole thing or if I'm going to watch like half of it like I have been doing, just to try to keep myself honest.
How do you feel about that, Tanny? I feel like the episodes are made to be experienced in totality. I don't love the start and the stop move by Shane there.
Yeah, that's kind of a psychopath move, to be honest with you. Like, who?
I'm trying to milk it, man.
I understand that, but
I'm already depressed enough, Tanny. Like, losing The Sopranos.
I gotta tell you though, it only gets darker and more bleak from this point forward. It's already started, to be honest with you. But it's not gonna be very. It's not much sunshine here with the rest of the Sopranos here. But yeah, like,
spoiler alert.
Well, you know, it's a motif for the season seven is what the people who actually did the show refer to it as.
Okay.
So that they consider it season seven.
Okay.
It's just a thing for the Writers Guild, so they didn't have to pay them or something. I don't know.
All right.
Who starts an episode and says, you know what, I'll start it right here. I'm good. I don't need to see any more of this. I understand you're trying to milk it, but that's great willpower that you can just turn it off in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really enjoying it, but like I said, we talk about this often, all right? I go home to absolutely nobody but my dog. I need something to look forward to. So if I know I have nine episodes left, that gets me through the next 9 days or whatever. But if I split that in half, Danny, what's nine times two?
That would be 18, Shane.
18, so I get 18
Perfect
more days
for
of
Danny.
The Sopranos.
Yeah.
That's my number.
Play the lottery.
Couple things, though. You could rewatch The Sopranos.
Oh, that's a good call. I didn't think about that.
You could start another television show that you haven't seen. That's excellent.
Too.
Like The Wire.
No, but, absolutely not. I hate Baltimore.
Do you have any predictions? Like, do you have any predictions for how the season is going to go?
No, I don't like playing the prediction game. I like it because then I'll start reading Wikipedia ahead or I'll start reading IMDb ahead. I want to be completely surprised by everything.
So, like, I had this question for my wife who recently watched the show. You know the ending, right, from pop culture stuff? Like, you know the...
Yeah, I know that it ends with Tony in a diner, right?
So you don't really... Yeah, okay. So
that's all I know is that it ends... Yeah. And some people think that he's dead and some people think that he's not. That's all I know.
Okay.
That's all that you know?
Yeah. Finished Yellow Jackets last night, too. That one is creepy. Holy cow, man. If you're alone in the dark, don't turn on Yellow Jackets.
Tanny, there's a key detail there that he's not saying.
About Yellow Jackets?
No, not about Yellow Jackets. About the Sopranos finale that is interesting to me. That you possibly didn't pick up from pop culture that I cannot wait for your honest review of. on the air. The mechanism of how the show ends. I'm very interested in how you feel about it. But I hear Yellow Jackets is great. It's supernatural, though, right? I tend to not like those shows.
Well, it's not that natural because they use cameras and stuff like that, so it can't be all natural.
But it's a isn't it like
yuck?
Yeah,
ghosts.
Not,
and...
No, it's not ghosts. It's a thriller. It's a disgusting thriller. And I tweeted it last night that whoever wrote it needs to see several therapists because nothing in that show makes any sense whatsoever. But it gives you heart palpitations. Like, I don't know if it's COVID or if I'm just creeped out by the show.
I don't think it's I don't think it's COVID.
I don't know. Close contact, you know.
Yeah. You guys are still okay, right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Right, outside good. Of the heart palpitations.
Yeah, right. Outside of the depression and the heart palpitations.
Yeah, remember how alone I am?
Yeah, no, I
1883
do.
Did that one, the prequel to Yellowstone. That's a really good show. I know people are talking about that in the Twitch.
83!
Yep, in the Twitch. I love Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. They are the main characters in that. Yeah, but I'll keep you updated on my Sopranos journey. I'll watch
Please
a whole
do.
Episode tonight. If you think it's better that way, I'll watch an entire episode tonight. Stage 5.
Yeah,
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I Stage 5 is one of my favorite episodes. I think it might be in my top 5. Great cameo in that one. But the thing about watching The Sopranos is, like, David Chase intentionally puts things in the writers. You know, you had a lot of Terrence Winter there and Matthew Weiner on that season. Like, scenes intentionally, you know, woven from scene to scene with connectivity. You know, I think you lose a little bit of it. I know you're trying to milk it, but you're losing some of it by stopping it in the middle because then you forget the things that get you to that point, I think.
Anthony Jr. is a real jackass, isn't he? Look at his stupid pencil line beard. Oh my God.
Danny, Shane's a hate Anthony Jr. guy. I don't know.
I tweeted a while ago during Christmas break that I thought that what's-his-face, Chris Moltisanti, was the worst character in the show.
Which is the worst take of all time.
Yeah, but it was like right after he had beat the crap out of Aid, and it was like he was still shooting heroin into his toe crack.
Don't
so,
forget about Cosette, R.I.P.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely Anthony Jr. But Anthony Jr. pulls tail, man.
Oh, yeah.
that little dork pulls tail.
Donia Ramirez, that's her name, Shane.
That's
Shane
it.
Says,
okay.
Yeah, I'm at the scene with Tony and the Latina.
No, I said Anthony. I said Anthony. Okay, okay. You blew right past that.
Yeah, Tanny, do you think there's a worse opinion than the worst character in The Sopranos is Chris, who's probably a top 3 character in The Sopranos?
Easily. I mean, there's so many great performances on that show. Like, I don't know if you're just talking about the actual character, but certainly Michael Imperioli's
the character and the acting.
It's just like, one of the best performances in TV. It just so happens that Gandolfini's on the same show, so it gets overlooked by a lot of people, like Shane. I think maybe on the second run-through, maybe you'll appreciate Christopher a little bit better.
I got a lot of hate for that one on Twitter.
Rightfully so.
I got ratioed so hard when I said that.
Maybe that's why Michael Imperioli never responded to come on the show.
This was after.
Yeah. Was after. So you had bias.
This was after.
God, I read that. And I was like, I don't know what to do with you. Like, that's just a. But I'm glad you stuck with it because you started it years ago.
I started it like 3 years ago, and I couldn't get
ridiculous.
Through like 4 episodes.
That is.
And I picked it back up during this last spike in COVID.
Yeah, right. So I'm glad you stuck with it. Maybe in 10 years you'll get around to The Wire.
I doubt it. Remember, I don't like Baltimore as a city.
Yeah, but
and the fact that you like it, you love it, that's not going to go well with Shane.
Like, I don't want to be watching a TV show thinking about you the whole time. It's supposed to be my escape, Danny.
My bad, dude. My bad. I also like The Sopranos, though.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
That's
I can only do so much thinking about you when I'm not here.
Got it.
When I
Got
lay
it.
Down in bed at night, when I wake up.
During therapy. Yeah. I understand. Danny's open and my dreams for what the Bears could be coming up. Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.